San Francisco.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I am Jeff Hayden. Our topic tonight includes select family law issues. How do you approach the summer schedule? But before I introduce my guests, I'm pleased to announce the return of Call a Lawyer Night. Each of the lawyers standing by to answer your questions off the air are longtime supporters of Call a Lawyer, including, for family law and collections defense, Nathaniel Bigger of San Francisco, landlord-tenant, Sal Timpano of San Francisco. In family law, Betsy Johnson, a certified specialist, also from San Francisco. Patent law, aviation law, lemon law, BBB arbitration, we have Ron Rohde from Palo Alto. Tax law, real estate law, Frank Adam of Pacifica. And in estate planning, we have certified specialist Catherine Ray Wong of Redwood City. If you have questions you wish to discuss with these attorneys off the air, call 1-800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. And I will repeat that information throughout the program. Our program tonight involves select family law issues, and what a program it will be. My guests in studio tonight are family law specialists certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. We have Janet Frankel from San Francisco. Welcome, Janet.
Hi, Jeff. Nice to be here.
And BJ Fatum from San Jose. Welcome.
Hi, Jeff. Nice to be here.
Both of our guests are members of the family law section of the California Lawyers Association. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the local dialing area, you can call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. And I'd like to welcome you both. You've each been very generous with your time in participating on this show for several years, as well as in Call a Lawyer Nights. Let me welcome you each to Your Legal Rights.
Thanks, Jeff.
And let me start with this. We've been talking before the show started about summer schedules. What is it that that really brings up? How is it different dealing with summer than dealing with the rest of the year?
So most of the time, the summer schedules will be different. And we hope that by this time of this year that most parents who are separated, not living together, have worked out a summer schedule. Because if you don't, trying to get into a court as an emergency is probably going to be very, very difficult before summer starts. But there's a lot of different factors to consider when you're dealing with the summer schedule, and there's different things that we have to consider.
Well, as far as the timing, you want to be able to have time to sign your kids up for camps and make plans for schedules that don't involve school. So usually we try to encourage people to make those plans before Memorial Day, maybe in April, and even in March if possible. However, here we are right after Memorial Day. So what do you do if you find yourself without a plan, without agreements, and the summer is about to start?
And under certain circumstances, you might be able to seek an emergency hearing with the court. But we hope to have it worked out, because one of the things to consider is during the school year, depending upon how far apart the parents live, the parents don't live within a distance that allows them to have more of a shared custody during the school year, then you're going to try and have the parent who has not had most of the custodial time during the school year make up some of that time on the holidays and most often in the summer. So we do look at possibly having a different schedule, maybe more of an alternating schedule or more time with both parents during the summer to try and make that up. And so we have to look at what was the school year schedule? What are the ages of the children? What's the distance between the parents? How is that travel going to look? And most important, we have to first take a look at, is there any domestic violence and a restraining order in place?
One of the things you brought up a few minutes ago or a few moments ago talked about getting into court and whether there's time to get in or what for an order, or whether you need an emergency order of some type. We've been dealing with cuts to the courts budget for several years now. Is that something that takes more lead time than it may have 5 to 10 years ago to get a court hearing, to get a date set before the judge?
It depends on whether what you're looking at is a true emergency or not. So failing to come up with a plan to have a different schedule in the summer before the summer begins isn't necessarily an emergency. And so the court can grant emergency requests on very short notice, 1 day, 2 day notice, or you can get a shortened time for hearing and maybe get into court within a week or less if there's an emergency. But there has to be an actual emergency, and just not having a new schedule for the summer isn't an emergency.
It's pretty much up to the judge, too. I mean, some judges may take a look at it and say, and I've had this happen most recently, that such an ex parte for an order shortening time because there's no summer schedule, the court granted the hearing. Now, whether or not the court's going to grant their request is something else, but the court granted a hearing to at least have the matter heard in about 3 weeks, as opposed to, you know, waiting the 45 to 50 days before you can get into court.
Another thing that makes it a little cumbersome for custody matters is that in California we have mediation that happens. So the parents will meet with a family court services mediator and try to work out some kind of an agreement about the summer schedule. And the mediators are pretty busy too, so you have to find time on their schedule. So it's not just the court having time on their docket, but if you haven't been to mediation yet, often the court will just keep moving the hearing until you can go and talk to mediators.
Again, if you have questions that you want to discuss off the air, feel free to call off the air. Call A Lawyer Night. Our number is 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. And again, we have it covered with family law, collections defense, landlord-tenant, patent law, aviation law, lemon law, arbitration, tax law, real estate law, estate planning. Additionally, if you have a bankruptcy question, tomorrow, Leon Baer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy law and longtime supporter of this program, is available for your calls at his office between 9 a.m. to noon. His number is 800-477-3111. And again, that's for Leon Baer, 800-477-3111. So we've talked about the difficulty of getting in front of some courts, and I imagine that varies a lot by local jurisdiction. Some are probably more devoted to family law than others, and some probably are not. What other things come up? You mentioned vacations not considered emergency. Are we talking about summer vacation not being considered an emergency, or perhaps somebody wanting to go away is not considered an emergency?
Well, what I was talking about is a poor planning is not considered an emergency. So, however, sometimes something is really important to a child. Like there's a camp that they go to every year. And, well, let me give you an example of what I think might be an emergency is if the parents have been doing the same thing every summer and one parent expected that this kid would be able to go to the same camp that they always go to every summer, and then the other parent says, no, I'm not going to allow that on my time because that's my regular time and we don't have a specific summer schedule. That might justify getting the court involved. If someone has an expectation that a certain schedule would be followed, and then suddenly the rug is pulled out from under them.
And here's another emergency that I've recently dealt with, that the summer was expected to be alternating weeks with each parent, which is not unusual when you change into the summer. But the child, because of his academic performance during the school year, has to go to summer school. And one parent says, well, I'm not going to take them. And they have an alternating schedule. That's an emergency because we have to keep focusing on the children. One of the other things I keep seeing is when you already may have an order set up where each parent gets vacation time, which is very normal. It's whether it's going to be 2 weeks, 3 weeks, which is dependent upon the age of the child, how much time they can stand to be away from the other parent. But one parent wants...
Do you mean the one parent would get the entire vacation?
Well, one parent would get 2 weeks or 3 weeks. If a child's really young, they may not be able to tolerate... 5-year-old may not be able to tolerate 3 consecutive weeks away from the other parent. Whereas at 5, maybe they can tolerate 1 week to 2 weeks. And so we split them up where how much time is consecutive. But that parent all of a sudden wants to travel internationally. And we see that a lot in the Bay Area because we're such a melting pot. And during these vacation breaks, some parents may want to take the children back to see their relatives from whatever country they came from. And it's going to depend. A lot of parents are a little bit skittish about that because certain countries are not a signatory to The Hague. And even if they are, there may be a problem if the child is not returned from that country.
On the other hand, if you have parents who aren't cooperative, or you have one parent, it only takes one who isn't cooperative, they can stand in the way of their child getting to know the extended family of the other parent by just saying, well, they're going to kidnap the child if they leave the country. And then the court has to take that seriously. And meanwhile, what you're really doing is you're messing with your child's ability to get to know their family, which is in their best interest.
You mentioned international travel, and one question that comes to mind for me is whether international travel means vacationing or traveling and remaining outside the boundaries of the United States, as opposed to some place that may be the United States, but you have to leave United States territory to get there. For example, if we have a case where family may be in Hawaii, and you have to leave the territory of the United States to get there, would that be considered international, knowing that at some point they've left the country and they could deviate?
Not usually, because a travel like that, you usually have to exchange itineraries, and it's a flight directly from the United States. You don't need passports. I think that's where the trigger is. If you need the child's passport for the travel, that's where the other parent can actually obstruct it and say, well, I don't agree. If it's a really conflicted case, sometimes the passport's held by minors' counsel, held by the clerk of the court, or there's all kinds of different things. But usually when the passport is going to be needed for the children, or they need to obtain the passport, which requires both parents if there's joint legal custody, that's going to be triggering international travel. And that's where you have to kind of take a look at where do they want to take the child to. And Janet's right. Sometimes this is used in these high conflict cases where the child is the losing party. Not only they lose out on seeing extended family that they may not see because for some reason can't travel to the United States. Maybe great-grandma or grandpa is too old to travel, they're not physically able to. Or they miss out on an incredible vacation to Europe or, to another country because the other parent raises the fear, well, they're not going to be returned. So the court has to take a look at all the different factors. Is there really a risk of abduction? And take a look at the countries. Certain countries, there is a fear. I mean, especially if it isn't a Hague country, if they're not a signatory, there really is no remedy if the child is not returned.
Also, you mentioned Hawaii, and in California cases, parents can't take their children out of the state without the other parent's written consent during the pendency of a dissolution proceeding. So there's a prohibition against out-of-state travel without the agreement of the other parent. So, the non-traveling parent could put the kibosh on a trip to Hawaii, for example, even though you don't need a passport because it's going to be out of state. It gets a little bit more complicated when the out-of-state travel is, say, to Reno, or someone is taking their child up to Tahoe for a vacation and crosses the border into Nevada. I've seen that happen numerous times, and huge complaints are made by the non-traveling parent. Well, they took little Johnny out of the state of California, and I didn't consent to that. And so
they'll pick different factors. I mean, and in addition, there's the automatic restraining orders that Janet referred to, that pending the action, you can't remove the child from the state of California. But some orders will also have, especially on the temporary orders, that the child can't even be removed from the 9 Bay Area counties. And that restricts the child. Can you imagine your child for the summer just because mom and dad can't or mom and mom or dad and dad, can agree regarding the vacation time.
Can't agree that it's daylight.
Exactly. Can't agree on anything. So this child is not even going to be able to go and do different day trips.
Can't go to Disneyland.
Nope, because it's not in the nine Bay Area counties without having to go to court and get a court order to allow them.
Can you imagine not being able to go to Disneyland?
And we've seen those cases.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. We're talking about family law issues, how to approach summer schedules. In the studio with me tonight are family law certified specialists, Janet Frankel from San Francisco and BJ Fadum from San Jose. Both guests are certified specialists in family law by the California Board of Legal Specialization. Both are members of the family law section of the California Lawyers Association. If you have questions for my guests, the phone number here is 866-798-8255. Get your pencils. I'll repeat that again. It's 866-798-8255. There's a lot of things that if people are fighting over, we can get creative with in a family law case. If the parents are fighting over photographs and things, we can duplicate them. And maybe they each get one, and maybe we mix it up, and nobody knows which are the originals and which are the copies. But they're photographs. Can't really do that with the children or the pets.
No, and that's the problem. And what I always tell people is the biggest losers are the children. And I represent the minor children. You should hear what some of them say. They're plugged in much better and a little bit more mature than the parents at times because they don't want to miss out. And I think the other thing that we look at is if they have to travel a long distance to see the other parent. And this is usually in a case where a parent hasn't seen the child much during the school year because of the distance. And then at the last minute, there's all kinds of different things that are pulled up to try and either delay or obstruct the travel with the child. We have the unaccompanied minors on flights, depending upon the age, and different situations like that, and having the itinerary. I have a lot of cases where one parent lives in another country, and so they don't see the child much during the school year, and they look forward to that summer. And yet we come to the summer, and all of a sudden the custodial parent is finding every excuse in the world why this child cannot go to see the other parent in another country because, you know, it's going to be a long travel.
I was thinking that one of the things that we could offer to the listeners today is some ideas about how your summer schedule might look different. So let's say, for example, your regular schedule is either a what we call a 2-2-3 or maybe a 2-2-5-5, which means one parent has every Monday, Tuesday, the other parent has every Wednesday, Thursday, and then you alternate weekends or some version of that. Or let's say one parent is the primary custodial parent during the school year and the other parent has a Wednesday night visit and alternate weekends. Those are just a couple of examples of fairly common regular school schedules. And I'm emphasizing that it's a regular school schedule because it's really geared around it being in the best interests of the children to have a really set, stable schedule while they're going to school so that they can have a routine and they can get their homework done and they can be successful in what's really important in their life, which is to grow and learn and go to school. In the summer, unless they have a need for summer school, they don't have school. Usually the children still work, but it's a good time for the parent who didn't have a lot of time during the school year to have some additional time during the summer. And so often what you see is people changing to a week-on, week-off schedule in the summer or a two-week, even a two-week, two-week schedule if the child is old enough in the summertime.
Right. And we have to take a look at the age of the children, too. You start to get into the teenage years, and they have their own idea about what they want to do for the summer. And so as the children get older, it's important for the parents to check in and listen to the child, 14, 15, 16-year-olds. what's your plan for the summer? The child gets to be about 15 or 16. They may want to get a summer job. And if you're fighting over, well, I don't care what you want to do, I get my alternate weeks because that's what we've been doing for 5 years. But that's what you were doing when the child was 10. You have to kind of take a look at it and focus on the child. Does the child want to play a particular sport that summer? And we see this all the time, Janet and I both, we've talked about it, where you're not asking the child, what do you want to do this summer? And let's say the child wants to do a particular sport, and one parent says, well, it's my time, I'm going to do what I want on my time, because they want to be contradictory to the other parent, and they're not really paying attention to what does the child really want to do.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights, and again, tonight, I am pleased to announce the return of our Call a Lawyer night. If you have questions in family law, collections defense, landlord-tenant, patent law, aviation, lemon law, tax law, real estate law, or estate planning, we have lawyers standing by for your call. You can reach them at 800-525-9917. That's 800-525-9917. Or if you have a bankruptcy question, Leon Baer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, is ready to receive your calls tomorrow from 9 a.m. to noon at 800-477-3111. Again, that's 800-477-3111. And one of the things that you just said was talking about the children's interest as they're getting older. One factor that I wanted to ask you about, as children get older, they're far more interested in their friends, in their peers, maybe a little less so with spending time with the family, and certainly with their parents. How does that factor into putting together a summer schedule?
It's very important, and I think this is the most difficult issue I have with the parents, whether I'm representing the parent or I'm representing the child. I don't know about you, Janet, but trying to explain to them as the child gets older, they don't want much time with either one of you. And I know because I had, as a father, I had the same issue with my own daughter as she got older. We want to keep holding on to them, and we want to do these things with them, but you know what? They have no interest in hanging out with us. They've got their own ideas as they get older. So you got to keep that in mind when trying to develop what that summer is going to look like. And it's easier when the parents live fairly close together, but it becomes even harder when they live, you know, a distance apart.
It's hard enough in intact families, you know, dealing with the teenagers who have all these other ideas about what they can do with their life. And, you know, they're smart enough and they have a lot of intellect and they have a lot of physical ability, but they don't have any experience and they really don't have wisdom. And there's no convincing them of it. And that's the same in children of divorced or divorcing parents as it is in intact families. It's just harder because you don't have the parents necessarily willing to work together. I will say that a lot of separated parents do work together and do put their kids' interests first. So it's not always.
And I think for the most part, in their hearts, and I see this even when I represent the minor children, that both parents, I mean, they adore their children, and in their own way, they are putting the children first. I think that it's just difficult when you're entrenched in the conflict itself to see how that may be affecting the child, because you really believe you're protecting your child or you're doing what's best. And I think it even comes up as minors counsel, one of the biggest balancing acts I do is trying to balance the preference of the child with their best interest. As parents, we all see that at certain ages, we make the decisions for them. As they grow up, their preferences start to creep into our decisions, and they have a little bit more decision-making. It's the same way, but when the parents are involved in this conflict, I think it's a little bit more difficult for them to cross that line as to one parent may be when the child is too young. Well, it's the child's decision. Well, at age 6, 7, and 8, no, it's not. You have to make that decision. And then we have the opposite side where they're 15, 16 years old, and you have a parent saying, well, just have the court order them to do that. And they think that's going to work. And that actually can work against that parent by tainting the quality of the time with the child.
So You were mentioning that there's different age-appropriate periods of time that children can stand to be away from one parent or the other. But in my experience, I found that where the parents actually agree, the children can tolerate a lot more. So even if you don't actively share information about the conflict with your children, they know it and they sense it. And if there's no conflict, and you know your 2-year old is going to go off for a month trip to go visit grandma with the other parent, and everybody's for it and everything is fine, then the kid can tolerate it a lot better.
I absolutely agree. Because the children pick up the stress and the conflict between the parents. Like you said, you don't have to say anything in front of them. And as the children get older, it actually gets worse because they're going to listen in. I've had so many of my clients say, well, I've never said anything in front of Timmy. You don't have to. They're probably lurking around the corner every time you're on your telephone with your best friend. Because I remember my own daughter when she was a teenager and even before, a preteen. If my wife and I were having a private conversation, we'd have to open up the bedroom door a couple times, and there would be our daughter standing around the corner trying to listen in. These kids are very savvy, and they're going to do that.
And they're very interested.
Yes. They want to know everything, whether they're entitled to or not. So
especially if it's something that makes you less than perfect. That's what they're really interested in. They're gonna hone in on that. Well, but, you know, you said this. You say I shouldn't do this, but you did this yourself. That they love to call you out on that.
Oh, yeah.
So they're looking for it.
Yeah, the old saying I grew up with, you do as I say, not as I do, doesn't fly anymore. But but when the parents aren't getting along, especially, and one of the things that the psychologists have come up with is that the period of time that a child can tolerate away from what they call the primary caregiver is according to their age. So like they say up to 1 year, no more than 1 day. Up to 2 years, no more than 2 days. That's kind of what the default is what they're saying from a psychological standpoint. But again, you bring into that you have two parents that are working well together and the child knows it and they feel comfortable being with either parent. That type of a basic doesn't have to come into play.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I am Jeff Hayden. My guests in the studio tonight are both family law specialists certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, B.J. Fadum of San Jose, and Janet Frankel of San Francisco. Both of my guests are members of the Family Law Section of the California Lawyers Association. As we're approaching the summer and we're discussing how you approach the summer schedule, many people listening may have some questions about what they can do. And when we return in the next half hour, we're going to be talking about options they may have, maybe how they can find a solution without going to court. But if you have questions for my guests, our phone number is 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. Again, this is Your Legal Rights, and we'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
So where we left off, we were talking about children who may be reasonable, maybe not. Sometimes we have parents that are reasonable, but they just don't necessarily agree. What are some resources that a parent can go to? Maybe to get some guidelines, maybe to know whether they're centered or not.
There's a lot of help out there that I think parents don't reach out to often enough. What the courts will sometimes try to extend to the parents. We have one option is what we call co-parenting counseling. These are usually mental health professionals that are especially trained in conflicts between parents. Co-parenting is when you think that the parents could work together that the conflict isn't that high, but they just don't have agreements. And the co-parenting counselor, as a mental health professional, could kind of insert what they believe may be a good solution and help work it out with the parents. In high conflict cases, those don't usually work.
Even in high conflict cases, I've seen a co-parenting counselor doing parallel co-parenting counseling. So the parties, maybe there's some domestic violence history, maybe there's some problem between the parties, or it's just very high conflict, but they can still maybe learn some tools about how to communicate with each other in order to protect the best interests of the child and keep the focus on what's best for the child.
Right. And the co-parenting is when the parents somehow work together and have some communication. When that's not possible, that's what we turn to parallel parenting, meaning somehow keeping, as Janet said, the child in focus, but they're going to do their own parenting and they're just not going to be able to cross over and work together. But other ways is to, we've been using family therapy, again, a mental health professional who will meet with a combination of either parent, either alone, together, and sometimes with the children. Again, it has to do with the age of the children, what the dynamics are. And sometimes the family therapist can help the parents come to a resolution of what would be good for the summer. And some of the things that parents just don't even think about, usually both parents have to work during the summer just because the child's off.
Right.
You're not. Unless they're a teacher or something to that effect. But I would say the majority of the parents, they're both going to work during the summer. And they have to take a look at that as a realistic factor of to work around as to how is this summer going to look when you can't take the whole summer off just to be with your child.
One question comes up out of curiosity. You've both represented parents.
Yes.
You've both represented people that are sometimes reasonable, but perhaps some that are not. So let me direct this to you as parents' counsel. You represent a parent in a divorce with children who, in your opinion, is insisting on something really, truly unreasonable, or at least in your opinion unreasonable, primarily for the sake of punishing the partner. Perhaps they're refusing to let the child go to Disneyland, not because they fear for the child, but just to punish the partner. No matter what you say, your client's adamant and won't budge. What do you do? Is your client always right? Even if you believe your client's unreasonable and may not be acting in the best interest of the child, do you set aside your own beliefs and zealously advocate for your client's position, however flawed?
I think that's up to each attorney. My fee agreement actually has a term in it that says if you take a position contrary to the best interest of the child, I will not represent you, but I can refer you on.
My fee agreement says that if you don't follow my advice, I can fire you.
I think family law attorneys believe the way Janet and I do. But.
And I think that there are several different scenarios that come to mind as you ask this question. And in all of those scenarios, I always behave perfectly.
And I can attest to that, knowing Janet. But
no, I mean no. But I'm kidding. Obviously, nobody's perfect.
No.
But I've had clients who believed what they were doing was in the best interests of their child, and I was persuaded that they were right and later discovered that they were wrong, and then we parted ways. I've had clients who wanted to persist in a course of action using the child as a weapon to bludgeon the other party about the head and shoulders, I guess, figuratively speaking. And I have often found that in that case, when I have the party who's being resistant, that what they really that there is a part of them that is seeking advocacy and representation and someone to offer a break, you know, as in a foot break, as in a stop, you know, like if they can get it past me, then it's okay, and they will push on me, and they don't want to have that representation ended because they need that inhibition, I guess, if you call it.
And I think the key in this example you were giving, there were several in there, is, well, is it unreasonable maybe it that could be a subjective term, as opposed to it's not in the best interest of the child. I mean, what we may think is unreasonable, like Janet said, if you take a look at it, it may seem unreasonable to us, but in listening to the client as to what their reasoning is. But in the example, for example, you were indicating that they don't want to allow them to go to Disneyland just because they want to get back at the parent. Or I've even had a parent that says, well, no, I'm not going to agree to let them take them to Disneyland because I was going to take them first. And I can't afford to this year, so no, the other parent can't take them. So the child's going to miss out on Disneyland because you want to be a upmanship, essentially, is what you're talking about. That's not just unreasonable. That is not in the best interest of the children. And so I think, you know, all the family law matters are case by case. That's the bottom line. And you have to take a look at it case by case. But there are some cases that are clearly a parent is taking a position that is contrary to the best interest of the child. And in 33 years of practice, I've referred two on for taking such a position. Most of the time, after I've talked to my client and explained a few things and had them look at things, and sometimes I'll bring in a mental health professional as a consultant to help talk with my client and explain it to them. They usually will see how that's really not in the child's best interest.
If you bring in a mental health professional, do you meet together with them? You have them there in the office, or you just send them off to go talk to them?
I usually will send them off to go talk to them so that they maintain the confidentiality and they're only a consultant. At some point, the client and the consultant may say, let's have a meeting together. But as long as they're just a consultant, they're still a part of the attorney work product privilege, and that's what you want to maintain.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco, where I'm again pleased to announce the return of Call a Lawyer Night. We have lawyers standing by to answer your legal questions off the air. Each are longtime supporters of Call a Lawyer and include, in estate planning, Catherine Ray Wong of Redwood City. In tax law and real estate, we have Frank Adam of Pacifica, also a CPA as well as an attorney. In patent law, aviation law, lemon law, arbitration law, we have Ronald Rohde of Palo Alto. In family law, we have Betsy Johnson of San Francisco, a certified specialist in family law. We also have, in family law and collection defense, Nathaniel Bigger of San Francisco. And lastly, in landlord-tenant, never least, in landlord-tenant, we have Sal Timpano of San Francisco. All of these lawyers are standing by right now to take your calls off the air in complete privacy. You can reach them at 800-525-9917. Again, that's 800-525-9917. And here in the studio, our topic tonight are family law issues regarding how do you approach the summer schedule, the summer vacations, vacation from school, when you have parents or partners that are separated.
So Jana was also mentioning about mediation, that, you know, if the parties haven't come to an agreement yet on summer schedule, to seek out mediation through the courts. And it is a problem, especially certain counties that are impacted more, that you can't get in to see the mediator at Family Court Services right away. That doesn't stop you from getting a private mediator.
If you can afford it.
If you can afford it, exactly. There are attorneys that act as mediators. I've mediated entire divorce cases from custody to, you know, the property issues, and there's many attorneys that do that. There's also mental health professionals that will hold themselves out to mediate on the custody and visitation issues. So if they can afford it, you can always seek out private mediation if you cannot get into Family Court Services right away.
I know that the local bar associations have low-fee and sometimes no-fee panels. I don't know if they have mediators available, but that you can get a referral to an attorney that way in every county.
If you go to the county bar, each county bar, for at least a lawyer referral, which is usually about $35 for the consultation, and sometimes they're free. But if the parties can't afford it, there is the private mediator, both either an attorney or mental health professional, and also even a private judge. Certain attorneys and retired judges are certified. I'm certified as a private judge, and we will actually hear the case and can make a decision and sign the judgment for them or sign an order for them. So if they can't get into court and you can afford it, some of them can be very expensive, you can go and seek out a private judge yourself too.
Certain types of changes to your schedule you actually do have to have an order for, and it's for the protection of the parents and also because certain things you can't even do without an order. So, for example, if there's a domestic violence restraining order in place and you have an agreement that the restrained party is going to be able to take a trip with the children, that person is going to want to have a modification of that order, carving out an exception so that they can do whatever it is they're going to do on that vacation.
Exactly, because the restraining order is already registered and it's going to pop up.
Now, it's not limited to summer schedules per se, but I've heard some rather creative solutions to co-parenting, parents that have separated and how they deal with the children. For example, one couple I know bought another residence with an idea that the kids stay put and the parent that stays at home with them alternates. And the kids stay put. They stay in the same house. They go to the same school. Maybe 1 week one parent will be there and the other parent will go to the other residence.
That's...
Other than having separate wardrobes at each end, what are some of the pros and cons of such an approach and some other alternative, really different solutions that have worked for people?
I've had clients do that. I actually, growing up, had our neighbors down the street had done that, where the parents rotated. They did it every 6 months. They would rotate out of the family residence. They kept the family residence for the children until the last one graduated high school. So I've seen that happen. There's all kinds of – when the parents work together – you can come up with so many more creative ideas and ways to keep as much continuity for the children as possible.
It pretty much as strange as any scheme might seem, or creative as anything might seem to somebody on the outside, if the parents are in agreement, it's going to work. If they're in agreement, it's going to work, and the kids are going to thrive.
I had one case where there was a mother-in-law unit that was behind the family residence, and one parent would rotate out into the family-in-law unit while the other parent would be in the main house. That works to a certain extent. I think what becomes a little bit more challenging is when the parents get to a point where they find new partners. And sometimes what happens is the parents may be getting along great, but when one or both of them find new partners, all of a sudden the conflict starts up again, and that can create problems. And I've seen that where it'll start sparking the custody battle again, unfortunately.
I will say that if you don't have a plan in time and you can't get any changes made for the summer because it's already after Memorial Day and summer is here, that you can use this as a time to plan better for next summer and look towards the Thanksgiving break and look towards the winter break and spring breaks and ski week or whatever other breaks there might be and start planning now and be proactive in your ideas. Even if you don't know for sure what will happen, have some ideas and propose them and come up with them and say, this, how would you like to do this? And you should be talking to the other parent, not to the children.
No, never try and send messages through the children. And we see this too often where one parent will say, well, ask your father what he's going to do for the summer or tell your mother this. That the children don't want to be caught in the middle. It should be the parents discussing it between the two. But like we said before, once the children get to a certain age, engaging them in a conversation as, what do you want to do for the summer? Do you have a particular activity? Are you planning to have a summer job? You know, a lot of the kids, they want to hang out with their friends. I was talking to one of the kids that I represent, and all he wanted to do was, I'm going to hang out with my friends, go swimming, and I want to play video games all summer.
The video games that they couldn't play because they were in school.
Exactly, because it was limited time.
And because the parents weren't watching. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden, sitting in the studio with my guests, family law specialists certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, Janet Frankel of San Francisco, and BJ Fadum of San Jose. Both of my guests are members of the Family Law section of the California Lawyers Association. We're talking about how you approach the summer schedule when the parents or partners have separated. You can call with questions for my guests, and we are heading toward the summer season. This is really the time you want to ask these questions. Our number here in the studio is 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. I guess the next thing that comes up when you're thinking of summer, you're thinking of things that children do that they don't do during the rest of the year and how that might impact or separate the ideas of the parents. How do they deal with things such as summer school or summer camp, for that matter?
And that's where I think most of the conflicts come up. I think, like I indicated, that could create an emergency, especially summer school. You don't always know as a parent that your child's going to have to attend summer school until usually the last quarter or last semester, and then all of a sudden they're told by the teacher or by the principal at the school, look, if your kid wants to advance to the next grade next year, they're going to have to attend summer school. And you've got one parent that's not on board with it saying, well, on my time, they're not going to go. That's impacting the child.
Or the summer school might come with a cost, and one parent either doesn't want to pay for it or can't afford it. Usually, summer school is not the hill that I find people want to die on, because if the school has recommended that the child go to school, there's really it just sort of happens. They're going to have to find a way to make it happen. But if summer school is optional, or if there's a dispute about summer camps, that's difficult. And it's hard, especially with younger children, to find out what they want. Often children in a high-conflict family really don't want to do anything, because it could be, I'm positing here, that they are caught between not wanting to displease either parent. So they don't want to say, well, you know, yes, I like swimming, I like soccer, I like baseball. You know, well, what do you like better? You know, don't you want to go to this camp that's near my house as opposed to that other camp that's near his house?
Yeah, kids inherently want to please both parents. And so one of the biggest things I hear when I represent the child is I'll hear parents say, well, Johnny told me this. And the other parent will say, well, no, Johnny told me this. And what I tell them is, I have no doubt he told you each what you heard. That doesn't necessarily mean that's what they really want, because they're going to tell each parent what they believe that parent wants to hear. And if they know that the parents are in conflict, they're going to align themselves with that parent when they're with that parent, because they want to please that parent.
Lawrence from San Francisco, welcome. You're on Your Legal Rights. Lawrence, are you still with us? Lawrence, we hope you can dial us back and get back to us. It looks like we lost the call for whatever reason. Other things that tend to come up. What about one of the parents is working at hours that force them to use more child care? Is that a factor that comes up unusually in the summer schedule?
It could be, but during the summer, camps are usually used as child care. I do get this argument a lot, where you have one parent, let's say, is a teacher and has the whole summer off and can care for the child. And so their position is, well, I'm going to be off the whole summer. I should have the child for the whole summer. That doesn't necessarily mean that the other parent shouldn't have some summertime, even if they have to work. The first thing is everybody gets to take vacation. So the one parent that may have to work during the summer, they're going to be able to take a vacation at least.
And they might want to take a vacation with the child.
Usually they do. But there are some that don't.
Right.
It depends. And one of the things we see is there's a conflict in taking that vacation time. What I see a lot, and what I have advised my clients to do, is if there is a conflict, you exchange your vacation times. We usually do it early, like March. No later than March 15th, so you can plan your vacations. And most people, if they're employed, have to put in for their vacations ahead of time anyway. And then when they exchange that time, if there is a conflict or an overlap for the time each parent is asking for, one parent gets priority in even numbered years and the other parent gets priority in odd numbered years. And that way they take care of it that way.
I have to say that it is harder than it sounds to plan your summer in March.
It is. It depends on – sometimes if both parents agree, you can say within 30 days of taking the vacation and then if there's a conflict. But it all depends on how conflicted the parents are. And if they – but again, if they're going to be planning camps, especially, a lot of the most popular camps are pretty much booked up by the time you get to March, April, and May.
There's still time for those that want to call in off-air and speak to our specialists and experts that are standing by. The number to call a lawyer night is 800-525-9917. That's 800-525-9917. Standing by to take your call, we have Nathaniel Bigger of San Francisco. He practices in family law, collections defense, landlord-tenant. Betty Johnson from San Francisco, a certified specialist in family law. Sal Timpano from San Francisco, who practices landlord-tenant. Ron Rohde from Palo Alto, who practices patent law, aviation law, lemon law, arbitration law. Frank Adam from Pacifica, who is both an attorney and a CPA and practices tax law and real estate law. Catherine Ray Wong from Redwood City, a certified specialist in estate planning. And again, you can reach all of these folks at 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917. If you have a bankruptcy question, Leon Bayer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, is also available tomorrow, that's May 31st, from 9 a.m. until noon at 800-477-3111. And be sure to tell him that you're calling for Call a Lawyer Night on your legal rights. As we're nearing the end of the hour, if there's one thing you've been stressing throughout the night, it's to focus on the children.
Exactly.
Yes. And although parents strive to do that, sometimes they lose that target when they become too entrenched in the conflict. I've had cases where, especially during the summer, each parent will sign the child up for a different camp during their time. Sometimes there's nothing wrong with that if it's a day camp. And the child actually gains from that because they make friends during the time with one parent at that camp, and they get a whole different camp when they're with the other parent. And it actually has worked out quite well, and there was nothing to fight about. It's fine. It works out. So the key is to find a compromise where the child wins. And, you know, it's not a matter of winning or losing for the parent, but how is the child going to win for the summer? How do we make this summer the best for the child? Because as we were saying before, as a child gets older, they're not going to want to spend time with either one of you. So enjoy it while they're little.
There's also sleepaway camps where they go away and they're away from you for an entire week or 5 days. And I know that children benefit from that. They love it. It's a huge growing experience for them to be away. Usually they are homesick for a day or two the very first time they go, but then they want to go back every year. Those camps are the ones that usually fill up well in advance of the summertime. But there's still day camps that are always available. You can go to your local community center. You can check out the YMCA camps. They have day camps. And if your child is enrolled in some kind of private school, they probably have day camps also.
And Janet, I love the idea of the way camp. And haven't you had the clients that said, but it's my time. Which time does that happen on? And the answer is, let's take a week or a two-week camp, and that's neither parents. We'll split up the rest of the summer. That is the child's time away from both parents, especially in a high-conflict case. That is respite. That's asylum for them. They get to go away and not have to deal with either one of their parents.
Or they're maybe with extended family for a week without either parent there.
Well, as we reach the top of the hour, I'd invite each of you to take about a minute or thereabouts to sum up any last comments you would have. Janet, would you like to go first?
Well, I would say that you have to plan in advance. That if you're already here and you don't have a plan, then look to daycare, day camps, things like the YMCA or your community centers, and try to work with the other parent. If you can't speak to the other parent, find some other avenue to talk to them. There are online programs where you can communicate with the other parent without having to actually ever see them or talk to them. And you don't have to be using text messages and blowing up your phone. So there's a few of them out there, and they're all good ways to try and work something out. There's also, you can talk about having some kind of co-parent counseling, but that might not be good for this summer, but for next summer it might be helpful. There's a lot of other options for dispute resolutions. There's parenting coordinators. There's people you can actually agree to make decisions when you, the parents, can't agree what's in the best interest of your child. But I think the key message for the summer is to make a plan before the summer gets here. And if you haven't done it yet and you have to muddle your way through this summer, use it as a lesson to make a plan for next summer.
BJ Fadum.
And I would say the same as Janet said, but also focus on the child. Remember when you were a kid and how you couldn't wait for summer and all the plans you had that, you know, I want to hang out with my friends, I want to do this, I want to go to camp. Just try and remember that when you're trying to plan for the child too, and try and put your child's interests first. And if both parents do that and work together to try and make the summer the best for the child's going to win. It's not about either parent. It's about the kids.
Absolutely.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights. Tonight's topic has been how to deal with summer and summer scheduling when the parents are separated. I'd like to thank you both for participating. I'd also like to thank our guests off the air that you haven't heard unless you've been calling in. Seems that most people have been calling in off the air, but standing by, taking your calls throughout the night, are our Call a Lawyer volunteers. Tonight, that's Nathaniel Bigger of San Francisco, Betsy Johnson from San Francisco, Ron Rohde from Palo Alto, Frank Adam from San Francisco, Sal Timpano from San Francisco, Catherine Ray Wong from Redwood City. I'd like to thank each and every one of you. And for those who are waiting till tomorrow on a bankruptcy question, Leon Baer, we would thank Mr. Baer. He's available tomorrow from 9 a.m. to noon at 800-477-3111. My guests in the studio tonight have been BJ Fadum from San Jose and Janet Frankel from San Francisco, both certified family law specialists certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. Both are members of the Family Law Section of the California Lawyers Association. I would like to thank you both for appearing tonight.
Thank you, Jeff, having us.
And I would also like to thank our production assistant, Martin McLean, at the controls, Joanne Marr, and I'm Jeff Hayden. Thank you all.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.